The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, Women's Aid received more than 40,000 reports of abuse against women and children last year, the highest in its 50-year history. The domestic abuse charity last year witnessed an 18% increase in overall reports of abuse perpetrated against women and children. And I'm joined now by Sarah Benson, the CEO of Women's Aid. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning, Pat, and to your listeners.
The highest number ever recorded. And I'm wondering straight away, is there an increase in the incidents or is it an increase in reporting?
That's a really good question. And as I say, it's our 50th anniversary this year. Women's Aid is the oldest of the domestic violence organisations. And yet last year, we heard the largest volume of disclosures of abuse across nearly 29,000 contacts with both our national free phone helpline and our face-to-face services. And I think that unfortunately, this is telling us a couple of things. It's telling us that the prevalence of domestic violence is not diminished. I don't think it necessarily is telling us that it has increased, because unfortunately, it has always been there. And over 50 years, we've seen real improvements, both in, you know, the conversation on domestic violence, you know, government responses, legislation, and then we also are seeing things that are unfortunately persisting, which is kind of stigma, shame, victim blaming for both domestic and sexual violence as well. And then we are seeing other tools which are being used to abuse, which we couldn't have conceived of 50 years ago, such as issues with online. So online safety, stalking, pornography, things like that. What we are hearing in our services is thankfully more women reaching out for contact. We are seeing that domestic violence is becoming much more recognised as a matter for the whole of community. Last year, we trained thousands through our specialist training department, including many employers, with the recognition of domestic violence leave on a statutory footing. But what we're also hearing is just appalling levels of violence. So the harm that's being perpetrated is not abating, and we still have an awful lot of work still to do to do better towards eradicating domestic violence in our society.
Now, in your report, it indicates 40,048 disclosures during 28,638 contacts. So, in other words, there are people who are reporting multiple abuses.
Absolutely. And I would also say, appalling as those figures are, they are the tip of the iceberg. Our national helpline, for example, can refer callers all over the country to local services, both domestic and sexual violence services. These are just Women's AIDS numbers. And we know that most will not contact a specialist service. And about a third will tell nobody what's going on. But you quite rightly say what we are hearing is not a single incident. And what those who are contacting and seeking support from our services are telling us is that they are experiencing at the same time multiple concurrent both economic abuse, physical abuse in some cases, although I would always stress that you do not have to experience physical abuse to be in a really dangerous and really devastating abusive relationship. But all of these things forming patterns of behaviour, which combined have an absolutely extraordinary impact on women totally isolated, self-esteem, physical health, and with that options to exit becoming more and more challenging.
Now, it used to be the case that, you know, you call the guards for a situation that gets out of hand in a domestic situation, and the response would be, it's only a domestic. That attitude is gone.
It has certainly diminished. We do also record where it is offered. We don't obviously go through a checklist as part of our support services. We meet every caller where they're at, but where they disclose to our national helpline that they've been in contact with the guards, we do record whether they find it a helpful or an unhelpful response. And the majority do find it helpful, but there are still significant numbers who would report in some cases kind of minimizing perhaps not following through on really important things like, you know, breaches of orders being followed through on. And sometimes that can come from that sense of, you know, well, we'll have to wait for something more serious to happen. I know that we are focusing on stalking at the moment in developing our services and at our event today. And you know, training and education of the Gardaí is absolutely crucial, and understanding that pattern of behaviour, which is a criminal offence as coercive control. We still have work to do there. We can see, and we're working with pro bono with colleagues in Arthur Cox, who have produced a report for us looking at the publicly reported convictions for coercive control. And we see the huge difference in victim testimony where they are believed and where that pattern of behaviour is recognised versus where it is not. And it is the difference between somebody's safety and not, and also access to justice or not.
And the question of the law, which is a new law on coercive control, is it fit for purpose? I mean, obviously, if it is not, eventually it will be amended. But what are your colleagues in Arthur Cox saying about it?
Well, in tandem with our report today, our impact report for 2023, we're launching an interim report which has examined only the publicly available information on completed coercive control cases. So the law came into effect at the start of 2019, and we now have a number of cases that have concluded and many more proceeding. What we are by and large seeing is that it is actually a really important tool, particularly for the prosecution of offences relating to domestic violence. Before now, the guards, the legal system focused on single instance, perhaps of physical abuse or criminal damage or threats to kill, prosecuted those. That's one incident happening one moment in time, and all the victim can speak about is the impact of that one incident. Coercive control, we can see in these cases, allows the judiciary, it allows the jury where relevant to see the entire pattern of behaviour, the lived experience from dawn till dusk. And that is really making a difference in terms of how the impact and the huge range of behaviours that perpetrators
are using. So in fact, it might be easier to prove a coercive control case because of the variety and the extent of the evidence that is permitted to be offered. Whereas a one-off physical incident, for example, he said, she said, more difficult.
Absolutely. And what we also, and so what with coercive control, you can put a case together combining the evidence. Obviously, you have to have evidence of a wide variety of behaviours, some of which on their own might not constitute a criminal offence, but when taken together, clearly are showing a persistent pattern of controlling and coercive behaviour that has a very serious impact on the well-being of the person who is being targeted. And so we know from reports that we put out prior to coercive control being a criminal offence, that victims who have gone through the justice system often felt that even when there was a successful conviction, that the process, how long it took, and the very low level of sentencing was perhaps not worth it. Whereas now we actually see that that the courts can prosecute this and also really reveal the true nature of somebody's lived experience.
Sometimes women will say they have nowhere else to go. They have to return into the abusive circumstance which gives rise to their abuse. What about refuge for women who suffer this kind of, be it physical or sexual violence or even coercive control? Where can they go?
That's a really good point. And there are a number of refuge services all across the country. But as part of our third national domestic, sexual and gender-based violence strategy, which is a crucial cross-government strategy, there are commitments there to expand the level of refuge provision. And that cannot happen soon enough. However, in the current context, refuge should only ever be understood as what it is, which is a temporary emergency provision. We do, from our colleagues in refuge, and even from our own work with women where perhaps refuge is, you know, not availed of, but maybe somebody leaves and goes to stay with a family member or something like that. Our housing strategy, our local authorities are not consistent, and there isn't a proper perspective and response to those, primarily women and children, who are made homeless or at risk of homeless from domestic abuse. So women are going back because they have nowhere else to go. You know, proper creative solutions around being able to get onto local authority lists and things like that are not consistent. So the response cannot just be investment in refuge. It also, and I think our government does recognise this, and we welcome that, it has to be a combination of safe home, transitional accommodation, but also crucially, our housing strategy, our homeless strategy has to have that gendered lens and look at the particular experience and needs of those fleeing home because of domestic abuse.
All right. Well, Sarah, it's great work you're doing. I'll give you an example on my text screen. I didn't think my situation was abuse for a long time, as I'd spoken to a few counsellors and no one ever mentioned coercive control. I thought what was happening to me was normal and my fault. Out of desperation, I rang Women's Aid last week. The woman I spoke to was so understanding and very quickly said I was experiencing coercive control and economic abuse. I finally felt validated. She told me it was wrong and it was against the law. It's been going on for 7 years. I've since gone to the guards and they were also very supportive. I have finally had the courage to leave the relationship, so I'm so grateful for that Women's Aid support. So that's a testimony there. Sarah, if people want to contact you, what's the best way to do it?
Fantastic. And it's wonderful to hear that somebody has come through. And we would really acknowledge that people who come through this, it takes extraordinary courage to survive and come through. Our National Free Phone Helpline number is 1-800-341-900. We also can refer you without even having to change, pick up the phone. We can directly transfer also callers to all their local services, including our own. And acknowledging that, you know, this is primarily something affects women, but men are also affected. We do also refer to our colleagues in the male advice line as well, who have a free phone service. So please, never hesitate to pick up the phone any time of the day or the night.
All right. It's 1-800-341-900. And Sarah Benson, CEO of Women's Aid, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.